Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us tonight. Beginning of September, beginning of the school year, when Mercury is no longer retrograde, if that's part of the way you look at things, and lots of new things happening as we move into the fall. My guest this evening is Alice Langholt, who is a Reiki master teacher, which for many people is a shoulder shrug. What does that mean? But she has been working with a new lineage of Reiki and has really developed some entirely new things from it. And that's a fascinating thing for us to talk about, and I'll introduce her in a few minutes. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. I live in a college town. I live in Amherst, Massachusetts, and people say, oh yeah, college town must be cute stores and nice food. And it's true. We have food from all over the world, including Africa. And in the summertime, it's the kind of place that people come because it's a fun place to walk around. It's cute. There's historic buildings. We have Emily Dickinson's home is here. Robert Frost's collected papers are in the library. It's a cool place. Until the students show up. We've got three colleges in town. We've got Amherst College, which is over 200 years old, is one of the cornerstones of the entire town. We have Hampshire College, which is an experimental college where kids basically make their own program. And I almost called it by its affectionate nickname, Hampshire College. But just half a mile from me is the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, which started out as a little agricultural school and is now a major research university with tens of thousands of students. So in the summer, this place is quiet and sweet, and then all of a sudden, almost overnight, the place changes. 30,000 people show up, plus the staff and the instructors. And they're all young. They're all think everything they're doing is really important, and it all has to get done right now, and it's important that you pay attention to them. And they've got a lot of energy, and they don't have classes yet. So right now, you can't hear it in the background, but there's partying going on in the various houses around me as the students come back. Now, why am I mentioning that? Well, everybody's heard about my surgery at this point, and I chose to do it during the summer because of the difference in the energy of this town in the summer when it's quiet and there's plenty of parking and, you know, the townsfolk would say nobody's around. As opposed to what happens when the students are here, when there are people everywhere and there's no parking and most of the people in town don't really care if you're local and you're having difficulty walking or anything else. The energy completely changes in much the same way that it changes between somebody living in a city and you go to the country. And you go, oh, it's so nice and quiet here. And there's, well, that's exactly what happens. And the energy that we live in, the energy around us, the people around us, the attitudes around us, have a huge effect on us all the time. But especially if you're going through healing or some kind of personal crisis, doing that in the middle of a bunch of people that are aggressive or acting out, as happens in college towns, is much more difficult. So I made a choice to do it during the summer. And you can make those choices in your life. What are the things that are in your life that surround you that are affecting you in ways that are not working for your highest good, your growth, your healing? And how can you change those? Either by doing something like moving, or being with different people, or going on vacation or going to a particular place that you feel is very calming and very healing. We've got way more choice than we usually give ourselves room for, and we're each of us being affected much more by our environment, both the people around us and the physical environment that we usually look at. So my metaphysical musing for this evening really is take a look around, see how things are affecting you, and then make some conscious decisions about what you want and how you want things to be. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing. You can hear more about me and my work at househealing.com. But tonight, we're going to be talking to Alice Langholz, who's been my Facebook friend for years, and then we became colleagues in doing the Reiki healing, and we've really had an adventure together for the last year or so. So welcome, Alice.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here, David. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Oh, my pleasure. I've been looking forward to talking about all the things that that we've gone through together, but also all the amazing things that you've developed. Lots of people do Reiki, but I met you because you were doing Kundalini Reiki, which was an entirely new lineage. So talk a little bit about how that started and how you found out about it.
Sure. I was never anybody that – I was just a regular kind of a person, I guess, if you could imagine what that means. But it basically means that I was having absolutely no knowledge of anything metaphysical other than the fact I had read some stuff about you know, when I was a kid, I was always reading books about somebody that had magic powers, or I loved, you know, fiction like that and wished that that could be me, and read a couple of books about, like, trying to be psychic, and I tried when I was a kid, but I had no idea what I was doing, and I had absolutely no connection to anything, just sort of a vague wish that I could. And I went through most of my young adulthood, in fact, just in the same sort of state, looking for something, but not really thinking there was really anything there for me beyond my five senses. And, I mean, I really tried. I studied spirituality. I studied religion. I ended up getting a master's degree in Jewish studies and became a Jewish educator for 11 years. And people often said to me, you should be a rabbi. And I was like, no, I can't be a rabbi because pretty much I didn't believe in God.
Is not unusual in the Jewish community. So,
no, not even for people who are full-time Jewish educators.
That's right.
So I didn't go around telling my students that. But personally, I didn't believe in God because I didn't experience God in any way that I could notice or say it was anything significant enough to be sure about. So there wasn't anything spiritual in my life except for a little bit of niggling frustration on that level, in a deep personal way, that I hadn't found something, you know? And I just wanted to feel something, to know there was something there. And I really didn't find it until I was attuned to Reiki. And it just sort of happened, like, randomly almost. When I have four kids, and my youngest is about to turn five. And when I was pregnant with her, I was at school picking up my oldest daughter, and a parent of her friend, of her school chum, was there in the hallway and said to me, oh, hi. And I said, oh, hi. And she said, oh, so you're pregnant. I mean, like, it was like, duh, of course I was pregnant. I was very pregnant. And she said, and I was like, yeah. And she said, well, maybe you'd like to learn Reiki. And I said, what? You know, what's that? And she said, oh, it's an energy healing technique. It's very good for you when you're pregnant. It can help reduce pregnancy discomforts and help you in labor. And boy, did she get my attention when she said that. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm in. What is it? You know, so she taught me Usui Reiki, the first, basically the first two levels, but first, actually it was only the first level at first. And she gave me an attunement and gave me a book and taught me, you know, several sessions at her house, all the stuff you have to learn for Usui 1. And I, you know, diligently did my practices, but basically felt nearly nothing. Maybe a little bit relaxed, but nothing that I could really identify as being unique. And so I was underwhelmed, but I really wanted it to work, so I practiced. And then I had a baby, of course, because that's how things go, and then we became very busy. And so a year and a half later, I went back to her when I saw her at school, and I said, is there any more to this? Because, you know, I don't think I'm very good at it. And she said, oh, yeah, you know, you should learn level 2. a level two. Oh, okay, why? And she said, because it's much stronger. And I'm like, well, geez, now you tell me there's something, you know. I said, okay, all right, sure. So went back, and she attuned me to level two, and I came back for the next lesson, and distance healing, and scanning, and symbols, and all of a sudden, my hands were, I just happened to, like, remark, geez, my hands are tingling, you know, like, that's funny. And she said, no, that's the energy. And I was like, wait a minute, what? And she said, yeah, that's the energy, that's the Reiki. And I'm like, the Reiki's making my hands tingle? And she says, yeah. And I was like, that's the first time I've ever felt that. And she said, well, that's what it is. And I was like, I wasn't sure, you know, I was pretty skeptical. And so she lay down on her massage table, and she said, look, scan me. And I said, okay. And I, you know, ran my hands over her body, like above that, above a few inches above, you know, and I felt my hands start tingling again at one point and then turn off. And the tingles turned on and the tingles turned off depending on where I moved my hand. And I said, how come my hand is tingling right here? And she said, because that's where I have a pain. And I said, wait a minute. My hand is tingling in response to your pain? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, no way. And so I'm like moving my hands all over the place trying to see if it's consistent. And it was. And it was like, that was my aha moment. There it was, finally, what I've been searching for all my whole life, was there something happening, you know, something I can feel, something that's like a tangible response to spiritual energy or whatever, you know, something we can't see, but I can feel it physically. And I got very excited and just wanted to try more and more and more. And so I got very into it. We did a lot of stuff, distance healing and scanning, and I practiced every day, and I found a couple friends, and I sent them distance healing every week for 3 months. And the improvements in them and my own sensitivity were amazing. And so 3 months later, there was a Reiki master class being offered at Ursuline College near me, and so I took it. And then I just couldn't stop reading about it. So that's when I started learning about Kundalini Reiki, because I was like reading every discussion board on the web about, you know, Reiki and anybody talking about Reiki and anybody, you know, what kind of experiences have you had? What kind of Reiki did you learn? And when I read about somebody that had had a very powerful experience with something called Kundalini Reiki, I wanted to hear more about that. And so I read about it a lot and decided this sounds really good, because being a person who did not find what she was looking for from religion, I kind of wanted to be able to do this in a way that did not involve ritual. And the symbols and the structure of the hand positions and everything, I'm reading about Kundalini Reiki, which has none of that. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Just turn it on and it works. You know, I was like, this is something I need to learn and see if I can learn this too. So I went looking for, you know, a teacher, and found Ole Gabrielson, who is the founder of Kundalini Reiki, the one who developed it. And I read about him and how he came to come up with this method. And he did through his, and he's in Denmark, okay? He wasn't anyone that I traveled to go see. I got attuned by him by distance. And his story is that he meditated. He first learned Reiki also the traditional way, at least the first two levels. And he had this niggling feeling that it doesn't have to be so complicated. And that is what led him to trying things with the energy that other people were not doing. And he would meditate, and he would receive some guidance through his meditations about what had to be and what didn't have to be in this practice. So, you know, he questioned the traditions and tried new things and was guided by his meditations, and specifically felt connected to an ascended master named Master Kuthumi, which is spelled Kuthumi. But pronounced Kuthumi.
Right. And is mentioned in many, many traditions.
Yes.
So it's an intelligence that many other people have connected to.
Yes. So Master Kutumi gave him advice and guidance through his channeling and verified for him some of the things that he was already starting to feel about the way that Reiki works. And so Ole had put together this method, Kundalini Reiki, which works with the combination of the earth energy and the Reiki energy and is extremely simple and very straightforward to use. And he made basically an outline. His manual is very sparse. He wanted to keep it as simple as possible, and therefore he didn't go into a lot of explanation. And so when I learned this method, I had to sort of extrapolate what things were really about, how this really works, what this is really supposed to do. And I spent the next, I spent the next 3 months working with it with myself, and then I started offering attunements for free just in order to get feedback and make sure it was working the way it said it should and the way I thought it was what it meant, and getting feedback from people that I had attuned. And after I did that for 12 people, I decided it was working because it worked for everybody. Everybody had the same experience. They all felt their attunements. It was all by distance. They all felt their attunements. They all were able to use the Reiki, the Kundalini Reiki, exactly the way the manual said. It worked exactly the way it said it would. And I realized that this is something that I could do. And it was, you know, and I, the more that I worked with the energy, the more that I understood it. And I would explain it in these long emails and give them the sparse manual. And I would start writing these really long, long emails to my students trying to talk about how this is supposed to work. You know, I was essentially teaching by email. And after a while, I realized I needed to write a manual because this was just too hard. And I started attuning people and charging money to do that, but not very much. I started out like just charging just a little bit of money. And then I, you know, got more of a regular sort of a fee, but it's still much less than even one level of Ushui Reiki usually is, because I wanted to make it affordable and it's so simple to learn. You don't have to spend, you know, 8 hours to learn one level or some such. So I wrote the manual, and this is where David comes in, because right about the time that I was getting so disgusted with writing long emails, David had contacted me wanting to learn Kundalini Reiki, and I said, you know, sure, I'd be happy to attune you, and so I said, but I'm really interested in writing a new manual, and David said, I'd like to help, and so we worked together on creating a manual. And we worked together online through Google Docs, and this became, you know, with several revisions over the next couple of years, this became a really good manual, I think, for Kundalini Reiki. And I even presented it back to Ole and said, hey, you know, I made this manual for Kundalini Reiki because I think that some people need more explanation. And he said, oh, you know what, this is really good. Could I use it also and offer this to students? And I said,
right.
Sure.
Which was so wonderful to have the teacher and the founder of the method say, can I use your manual? That
yeah.
was great.
Yeah. So I was very into and always and have been since very, very into this method, this Kundalini Reiki. I think it's very strong. It works the way it's supposed to work. It's easy. It's simple. It doesn't involve a lot of ritual. And it taught me a new way of looking at things like hand positions and symbols from Usui Reiki, and not with an air of disdain, but more of an understanding of what it's trying to do. Meaning, like, hand positions are not there to just be a, like, make you like a robot and say, okay, now put your hands here for 3 to 5 minutes, then here for 3 to 5 minutes. It's a way to teach you how to do slow motion scanning as you are offering the healing to a person. And because if you stand there with your hands over a person's head for 3 minutes, you're going to start to feel what the energy is doing. And when you move your hands to the next position, you're going to start to feel what's different. So I started to get an understanding, a much deeper understanding of energy, things that weren't taught in my Usui Reiki class, or as far as I knew from other people, weren't taught in theirs either.
So one of the things you learned Usui Reiki in a manner very similar to the way I learned therapeutic touch, which was the first hands-on healing that I did, and was also based on what feelings you were getting in your hand as you ran your hand over the body and how they changed. So it's interesting that you see the whole Usui style and its rituals as being a way to teach that, but not tell you that it's teaching. That's kind of interesting. Well, and, you know, all of the Eastern traditions are apprenticeship kinds of traditions, and they all have very stylized rituals and symbols and other things that you need to learn as a way of doing that. And everybody does the same thing until you master it and move past it. That it's all tools, but at some point you go past the tools and you just do the work.
Yeah.
So the thing with Kundalini Reiki is you go directly to doing the work.
Exactly, which is what I like.
Right.
Learn it fast, use it now, you know?
Right. And the fact that the attunements really do change the energy in your body in such a way that you become a channel for the Reiki, because it's dramatic. You know, I've been doing this stuff for decades, and I noticed an immediate difference when I got attuned. So there is something very powerful that goes on with the Kundalini Reiki attunements.
And it's not just that you are so experienced and so sensitive that you feel every nuance of the energy. Maybe you do. But it's also that everybody, all of my students, like 100% of them have the same response. No matter if they've been practicing Reiki or some other energy healing technique for 20 or 30 years, or if they're completely and utterly new to energy, everybody feels it. Because if they didn't, if some people did and some people didn't, like you would have maybe expected, I'd quit. I'd go do something else. I mean, I'm a writer. I am a teacher. I write games. I write music. I mean, there's like things that I could do with my life that I could move on and do something else. But the fact is that because this works for everybody, oh man, I am so motivated. You know? I just love it. Oh my God, I love it so much.
You're so much fun, Alice. You're so enthusiastic.
I'm the Reiki evangelist. I know. I just love it. Go ahead.
Well, you're passionate about it because you've seen the results. You've seen the results consistently. We're going to go to break in a couple of minutes. I want to give out the call-in number now so that if we've got people lurking out there with questions for you, they can call in. And we're going to talk about the school you created and the new method that you developed on the other side of the break. So the call-in number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. And after the break, there's a whole second part to this story, folks. It gets even better. I'm really amazed and impressed at how you've run with this and what you've developed. So we're going to be back after the break. Please call in if you have any questions for us. And we will be continuing our conversation with Alice Langholz here on the Farkas Files on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere. Stay here.
Look, up in the sky.
It's just a leaf.
Not just any leaf. It's the Smartway leaf from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
The Smartway leaf?
Yes, the Smartway leaf. Look, it's green and blue and white, and you'll be seeing a lot of them on cars and trucks.
We're going to be seeing a leaf on cars and trucks. Why?
Well, the Smartway leaf tells you what cars and trucks are certified as better for the environment and can save you money on fuel.
A talking leaf?
No, it's a logo leaf. You know, leaf, the environment.
Why not an acorn?
A leaf is better than an acorn.
An acorn is pretty good. It says environment. You can squirrel away acorns to symbolize saving money.
Well, the leaf works better with a tagline. America is turning over a new leaf for the environment.
Well, far be it for me to stand in the way of a good tagline.
Smartway leaves will be raining down all over the country.
Yeah, you wouldn't want acorns raining down on people's heads. That would hurt.
Right, so look for the Smartway leaf. It's the smart way to save money and the environment. Go to www.epa.gov/smartway.
I like
later,
the leaf.
Much later, we heard something. We didn't breathe for listening. Then footsteps on the back porch, creeping, then more confident. After all, nobody was home. A hand closed on the knob on the screen door to the kitchen and found it latched. We heard a little sawing sound as a file began to slice through the screen wire. Grandma reached down for something in her sewing basket. Through the darkness, I managed to notice Grandma's rocker was rocking and she wasn't in it. She was standing over me. "Keep just behind me," she whispered. I followed her across the room into the kitchen. Now we were by the door, and I heard the scuffle of heavy feet in there on the crinkly linoleum. Grandma turned back to me. Under my nose, she struck a wooden match with her thumbnail. She touched the match to something in her other hand. It sizzled. Then she leaned down and rolled it into the invisible kitchen. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book A Long Way from Chicago by Richard Peck. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov. A message from the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
All those smiling, happy faces, laughing, enjoying life. Then I turn the TV off, and I'm back to reality. The faces here are not so happy after the spill. I mean, just look around. The fourth-generation shop owner who'd give anything to turn on his dusty open sign. The fisherman with the thousand-mile stare. People of the Gulf region have been through a lot, and we're pretty good at bouncing back, but we can all use some help from time to time. If you're experiencing increased anxiety, worry, or anger, you should know that the assistance you may need to help you cope is here. For confidential counseling, call 800-985-5990, 800-985-5990, or text TALK WITH US to 66746. With help, you won't need a TV to see a smiling face, only a mirror. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council. Message and data rates may apply.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
We're back. And I'm here with Alice Langholz, and invite you to call and ask questions and tell us what you think. The number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. So Alice, when last seen, we had done the manual, you were doing more Kundalini Reiki classes and finding it was totally consistent. And then there was a whole other direction that you went in.
Well, it was more of a continuation of this direction, I think. But what I was finding is that I would talk about Kundalini Reiki and get all excited about it, and especially doing that at the Cleveland Clinic, because I have been, for the last year, I've been a volunteer there in the Healing Services Department, which means that I'm in the main campus there, and they send me to nursing stations, patients' rooms, family lounges, wherever there is a need, to offer Reiki. And so I was, you know, talking with the staff about this great Reiki method that would be so much better for nurses than like Usui Reiki. Nurses don't have time to do a series of hand positions on to try to help a patient, you know, but they could certainly sit for 5 minutes while they're doing something else, checking vitals or just listening to a patient and offer some Reiki or something like that, you know. So it's a much more practical method than Usui Reiki. And I was talking about that, and my volunteer coordinator finally said to me, "You know what, Alice? It's the problem is not the method. The method sounds great, but it's the word Kundalini." And I said, "What's wrong with that?" She said, "The word freaks people out. It sounds mysterious. It sounds weird. It's got strange connotations. It sounds foreign." She said. I said, "So we'll take it out." I said, "We'll call it practical Reiki because that's what it is." She said, "Well, that sounds better." And I'm like, "Well, I could write a practical Reiki course. I'll just rewrite the manual." And then she said, "Well, that sounds interesting, you know." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I'm going to do that because that sounds right, you know." And then I thought, well, what's Ole going to think if I'm like, you know, changing the name of his method or something, or taking out an important word? I'd have to call it something else. Okay, I'll call it earth energy. But is he going to be okay with that? Am I treading on his toes or something? So it turned out that right around that time, Ole and I were going to actually teach an introduction to Kundalini Reiki together online. Him in Denmark and me here in Ohio, using a virtual classroom program online that I use for most of my online teaching called WizIQ. And so he and I arranged to do this class and go through the manual and talk about the method for people that want to learn about it and then probably will want to learn the method. So as we were finally doing the class, I talked to him a little about this, and I said, you know, this is such a simple method, and more people should just think of it in a really accessible way. What would you think of if we just called it, you know, if we called it something else? He's like, call it whatever you want. I was like, what if I called it practical Reiki? He's like, fine. And I was like, cool. So I was like, oh, good, I've got permission, you know. He's like, whatever. He says, just get it out there, you know. And I said, okay, well, that's how I feel about it, but I just want to make sure it was okay. He says, yeah, you know. I said, well, you know, I don't like the name of this healing. Diamond Reiki is like one of the methods, one of the healing methods that's a part of this modality. And he goes, so change it. And I said, okay, good. And so I did. I simplified the names of things to make them more explanatory. And I did, and instead of writing just a new manual and just substituting a word here or there, I thought, you know what, I might as well just write a book, a textbook, basically. I'm going to write the manual that is actually a book about what I've learned about what Reiki is, how it works, and what it's all about. And then also make it a manual for this method, practical Reiki, otherwise previously known as Kundalini Reiki, but we're not using that word. And I wrote a whole chapter, part of a chapter, explaining about Kundalini Reiki and why, you know, where it came from and why I adapted it into this method. And so basically what I had been saying in about 8 hours worth of teaching the whole method for the last 2 years is just what I wrote in the book. So I wrote a book, and it's called Practical Reiki. And now, and it's an actual book. I published it. I self-published it using Create Space, and now it's on Amazon, and it's also on Kindle, and it's getting really nice reviews, and people are really liking it. And I've taught the Practical Reiki class a number of times, both live and online, and people are very, very happy with it, responding to it even more enthusiastically than they did to Kundalini Reiki, and I think it's, you know, it's really growing. So that's sort of been the next step. It's been a progression. It's not like a turn direction. It's more like I'm just like moving forward with what what has been happening over the last few years.
Well, and you also started the Reiki Awareness Academy.
The Reiki Awakening Academy.
Awakening Academy.
Yes, Reiki Awareness sounds kind of like, you know, a disease.
Well, I'm asleep. It's late, you know.
Yeah, I did. I said, you know, I had been teaching. So for a year, I've been teaching either Kundalini Reiki and then Practical Reiki and some other classes, an energy healing certification program that's more about complete intuitive development or a more holistic and global understanding of a lot of intuitive things like chakras and auras and angels and channeling and intuition and protecting your energy and all these different topics. And I finally was like, you know what, there's more students than I can handle by myself. There's more topics than I'm an expert at that people should be learning about. And there's teachers out there that should be sharing what they know. So I decided I was going to start a school. I must have like got guided or something. I tend to be guided by what I'm doing. I notice how my guidance works because I'm already doing it. And I go, oh, look what I'm doing. I think I'm guided to do this. Sort of like writing the book, right? So I started the Reiki Awakening Academy, and it just launched about like less than a month ago. And we have 8 teachers, including David, who's teaching a very cool workshop in November. And he'll tell you about that because I'm going to make him. and I'm teaching, of course, practical Reiki and some of my long range programs, including one called The Business of Healing, which is for anybody who's like me starting out and they want to do this kind of work, but make it their work and not a hobby. They actually want to try to develop this into a business, and how can I do this and have an online presence, and how can I develop this so that people will know I'm there, and how much should I charge, and how should I go about doing this, and those, you know, a whole bunch of things. I put together like an 8-month guidance process that involves, you know, really working with everybody that's in the program individually and together on topics that will help you become successful at doing this. And so that's one of the main, you know, one of the main big programs. But we also have a lot of one-night workshops, from the simple to the complex. Some of them are with prerequisites, most of them without, where you can learn whatever you want. I mean, in one night or in a 9-month or 8-month program. So the Reiki Awakening Academy can be found online under ReikiAwakeningAcademy.com.
Clever.
And, yeah, well, I try to keep it simple. And so, David, tell us about your class.
Yeah, it's a fun class. It's called Ghosts and Demons and Trolls, Oh My. As an introduction to all the various kinds of intelligent entities that are out there that people start to bump into when they become more aware. And many people have some experience that gives them a sense of ghosts and the reality of there being ghosts present and who they are. Some people have run into things that they know are malevolent. Other people are familiar with nature spirits that are often called elementals. And I want to give an overview of that, mostly so people can have an aha experience and go, oh, yeah, I remember when whatever the story is that they didn't have a context for, but also to kind of give the overview and the list and the perspective that all the stuff we've been hearing about and reading about since we were kids really does exist. It doesn't exist physically, but it does exist in a way that you can experience with expanded senses, and it can affect you, and you should know what to do about it. So we'll have a lot of fun. And obviously, awesome. The reason that I'm the guy to teach it is in my work, I run into this stuff all the time. So I've got very practical, concrete experiences I can share with people.
And they're fascinating.
I know, you sit there and kind of go, yeah, really? It really is like the Grimm's fairy tales? And I'm like, yeah, well, not exactly, but sort of.
Which my 9-year-old daughter is reading, and I'm sort of worried that it's disturbing.
Well, you know, I ran across an Einstein quote that was just wonderful, and he said, if you want your children to be more intelligent, read them fairy tales. If you want them to be even more intelligent, read them more fairy tales.
Yeah.
So there's something extreme. You know, what he was saying basically was expand their imagination, expand their sense of what reality is, because that's what's important. That's the framework into which all the other stuff fits. And if you're living in a very tightly closed box that says there's nothing outside of it, there's a whole bunch of things you'll never see because you won't let them in. And that's part of why I want to do the class is people kind of sit there going, yeah, well, maybe I don't, you know, whatever their version of I can't quite let this in. And I've got lots of stories of the reality of it, not only for me, but for other healers and practitioners. So hopefully that will make an opening for people to reconsider what they think reality is.
Yeah. That's why my brand name is Reiki Awakening, because that's what it was. I mean, I awoke to realize that there was more to life than what I thought. And that is a very hard thing for some people to do, to actually step out of their paradigm into a new way of thinking, you know, and actually being open to the idea that reality is not limited to what they thought it was for their whole 38, 39, 40, however many years of life. You know, you get into a groove where you're like, okay, I know what to expect, and I know what I'm going to feel, and I understand all my feelings, and I understand my sensations, and I understand, you know, my senses, and this is how the world is. And then to think that there's something we've been missing for all those many years because
Right. We
weren't aware of it, some people are just like not willing to even go there.
Right. Well, and it's built into scientific skepticism and the medical model. There was a well-documented and widely distributed study done in the UK with elderly patients who had recently suffered the loss of a spouse. And they weren't looking for it, but 80% of the people in the study told them that they had experienced the presence of their departed spouse at some point in the couple of days right after the person died. Mm-hmm. Either they saw them, they felt them,
something changed in the room. They smelled their perfume. There was a presence. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the study was being done by psychologists and psychiatrists. And they described that phenomenon as non-psychotic grief hallucinations. Because their paradigm was, if there was nothing there, it's a hallucination. We just don't know why someone who's not psychotic would have this hallucination. They could not let in that if 80% of the people are having that experience, maybe it's real. And we have to figure out what the phenomenon is. And that's something I bump into all the time. It's like, it couldn't possibly be because we can't have scientific evidence for it. And that's like saying, well, the distant stars didn't exist before telescopes. Or microbes didn't exist before microscopes.
Right.
Just because you don't have the measuring device for the scientific method doesn't mean that 6,000, 9,000 years in some traditions of information that is well documented and exactly the same cross-culturally. There's the cultural differences, but they're talking about the same phenomena and interacting with it in the same kinds of ways. And none of that counts. Scientific curiosity ends at those phenomena. And that's not true. Dean Radin at the Institute of Noetic Sciences says there are approximately 100 scientists doing hard science about expanded senses, psychokinesis, telekinesis, paranormal phenomena, all the kinds of things that are a daily part of my life. There are people doing hard science about it.
Oh, I have a mind lamp.
Cool. Well, just let me finish the thought. Only 6 of those scientists are in the United States.
Right.
The rest of them are mostly in Asia and in Russia, where there isn't the stigma to this kind of research. So the work is being done. There's a lot of information, but it's not widely distributed because that's not how you get grants and teaching positions.
Right. Princeton has a lab. That's why I was talking about this, because like this goes along with what you're saying, though. Princeton has a lab called PEAR, P-E-A-R, except I think that they might have lost their funding and had to move some of their experiments overseas. But one of the things that they're experimenting with is intention. I mean, that kind of energy. And I have a thing called the mind lamp. I bought it from them because it was I had to when I read about it. and what it is the energy of intention. It's the lamp changes colors on a completely random. Just it does it randomly. It's like a random noise generator. It sort of responds, but it's not noise, but like just random event generator, it's called. So it's just programmed to just randomly change colors. But what happens is if someone is doing Reiki in the room, or if you're intending for a certain thing to happen, it changes the randomness and becomes non-random.
Right.
So I have two of my kids will stand there and one will go green, 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 and the other goes purple, purple, purple. And they see who can race to get it to turn green or purple first. And it will. Or they work together to make it do that. And if I'm giving Reiki, it turns in the room, it turns white and just stays that way for like 15 minutes. It's completely non-random when that happens.
Right. And that partly comes out of studies that are widely done now with random number generators, which are basically computers with a program that spews out ones and zeros randomly. And when there's a major event that affects a large number of people simultaneously, and 9/11 was one of them, not only does the randomness change and become non-random, but it anticipates the event. So slightly before the event occurs, everybody knows about it and everybody is affected. And that shift in consciousness changes the randomness. And it used to only be a very few physics departments that had that. And then when they started realizing there was something to study, suddenly there were, however many thousands of those studies being done constantly all the time. So they're picking this information up all over the world. And, you know, we're finding out that everything is connected and that consciousness does affect the physical world.
Yeah.
Yes, that means they're changing the way the computer works. It's going from its program, which is random, which should just continue working correctly unless the voltage changes or something. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the program is not putting out random numbers. It's doing something else. And it's consistent all over the world. So the light sounds like a lot of fun. I got to get me one of them. But the principle has been studied for quite a while now. So fascinating stuff. And, you know, for people that have an expanded sense, you know, that can either see or hear or feel or in some other way get consistent information, it's easier to wrap your head around everything being connected and having an effect on other people, other things. But for people that don't have those expanded senses, this kind of stuff is, you know, eye-opening. All of a sudden you go, oh, I'm doing that. You know, and then there are the people that can change weather.
Yeah, I can.
Right.
But some people think you shouldn't because it's causing a problem somewhere else if you do.
Well,
I feel a little guilty when I do that.
We can have an interesting conversation about that because, you know, weather is conscious just like everything else, and you can have a conversation with the weather. My agreement with Rain is, yeah, I know you need to do this, but don't do it on me.
Right.
But, you know, if the storm can go right over you, or it can go a mile to the left, does it really matter? If this doesn't matter, could you not rain on me? It's an interesting way of looking at the world, and people laugh at it, and I'm sure there are people turning their noses up or scoffing as they're listening to this. And then there are people who have watched that happen, and sometimes very dramatically. And once you've seen that, and you've seen intention work that way, it's like, okay, there's something going on here. What is it? And then you find out it can be consistent,
yeah.
That you can get consistent results.
And a simple demonstration of that is melting a cloud with Reiki.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Although Wayne Dyer and his family used to sit in the grass and build clouds. Build clouds. It's easy to melt clouds. They would sit there and make the cloud the shape they wanted it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I haven't tried to do that.
So there's all kinds of exercises. And in many ways, it's the very same experience that you had with your, you know, Reiki awakening. You know, oh, something really is happening here. And it happened again. Oh, it's happening consistently. Oh, other people can do it.
Right.
And then you realize that there's way more going on than you had any idea about. For some people, that's extremely scary, especially if they've been told all their lives that anything like that is bad and wrong. But for other people, it's just an incredible opening, and the curiosity takes you in whatever direction you're being pulled by your experiences. It's really pretty amazing, and certainly a lot of my experience in my apprenticeship and my training.
Yeah.
So what's next for you?
Well, I have some ideas. I think I have another book that I'm going to write that's going to be the business of healing. I think I'm going to be writing a book about that in the pretty near future. And also, you know, once the school gets up and running a little bit more, you know, classes are starting to get filled up, and we've already had to add a section of like one class so that they could accommodate the overflow of students. Once we, you know, are really up and running and have, you know, everything filling up and growing and people, you know, everything in place, then I don't know, maybe I'll do a little touring or something.
There you go. Take it on the road. Cruise
I'd like
ships.
To, you know, do cruise some ships. Workshops, promote it.
Cruise ships, that's the thing.
Cruise ships, oh, I don't know. Maybe. I'd love to do a workshop in Hawaii on practical Reiki. That's kind of my dream, and I'd like to do that.
So there you go. Well, I know somebody that does all the logistics for seminars, so let me know when you're ready.
Woo!
There you go.
Okay, I like it.
So give people the information on how to find you and all the different things you do, because there's several websites. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
On the web, to go to ReikiAwakeningAcademy.com. I would like to start directing people there.
Mm-hmm.
Or ReikiAwakening.com, though I'm going to be revamping that website pretty soon. We'll move all the instruction over to the Academy, for instance.
Right.
On Twitter, I'm Reiki Awakening. On Facebook, Reiki Awakening 2. Because my first Reiki Awakening page was one of those personal pages,
right.
And it filled up, and I can't accept new friends there. As many people have asked me, and I can't.
So it's Reiki Awakening and the number 2, the numeral 2.
The number 2, yes. The numeral 2, yes. So,
okay.
And I also have a YouTube channel, but, you know. You could go there if you wanted. It's all called Reiki Awakening, so you can't really go wrong if you remember those two words.
And are you doing personal in-person classes in Cleveland, in your hometown?
Yes.
Information is on the Academy website.
Yes, of the classes that I'm doing, yeah, the local class is coming up and the local certification class is coming up. And if you want to learn about, like, my book signings and things like that, you got to go to ReikiAwakening.com.
Oh, book signing. The next is going to come groupies.
Oh, that'd be fun. I think I already have some. I don't know.
I have this image of Chippendales, you know, coming with their books and fawning over you.
Okay.
I just thought I'd leave you with that image for the evening.
Nice.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for being on the show tonight, Alice. It's always fun hanging out with you. And I really wanted people to hear the whole story because it really gives them an idea of how these things grow and move and how you follow guidance, even though you don't know you're being guided.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for being here.
It's an honor. I had a great time. Thank you very much for indulging me in being so interested.
My pleasure. So if you want to find out more about my work, you can go to househealing.com. And on that website, cleverly hidden on the contact page, you will find every conceivable way to get in touch with me. If you want to talk to me directly, there's a link to set up. It goes to my scheduling calendar, and you can set up an appointment to talk to me on the phone, which is much better than phone tag or email tag. For those of you that have been following my personal healing, I am doing really, really well. And I will be posting more on the website that I have for that. So at this point, let's say good night. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week. Please join us again next Thursday at 9 p.m. here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Thanks so much. Good night.